As far as I'm concerned, Portugal is underrated, and if anybody does get to Portugal, they go to Lisbon and they forget about the rest of this fascinating country. It's a small country, about 10 million people, 94% Catholic. It's got a GDP about the size of the state of Indiana. People make about $22,000 a year. The economy is on the skids like much of Europe. And we're going to learn about Portugal right now. We're joined by Cristina Duarte. Cristina's a guide from Portugal, and she's right here in our studios. Cristina, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
As a tour guide, you must see people coming to Lisbon and neglecting the rest of the country. What should people know about outside of Lisbon in your country?
Portugal is a small country. Capital is Lisbon. But as far as you drive away from 1 hour, you think that you are in a different country because it's so varied in landscape, in temperature, in people, in habitudes and costumes, and also food, that it makes all the difference.
When I go to a place like Évora or Alcobaça or Porto, these are, you know, regional capitals outside of Lisbon, I feel like there's more traditional lifestyles alive in the countryside. If you want to find the old-fashioned living in Portugal, where do you look?
North of the country.
North of the country.
The north of the country, because it's the area where, let's say, the country was born first. It is where it is located, the older towns, the older cities, the older churches. So automatically, all the older traditions are located in north of the country. So Porto is just the capital of the north of the country. Everything that is up the Douro Valley and the Douro River. So it's not only Porto city that is beautiful, but you have some others like Guimarães, that is said that is the nest of the country, so from where the country was born, or Braga. So all the cities are quite beautiful. To the south of country, in Évora, you mentioned Évora, it's completely different. It's area of plain, of a different landscape, is dry, so it's not as fresh and green as the north part of the country. And because of history, also the accumulation of people was different, so developed in a different way to the cities.
So if we think about this, the historic and cultural birthplace or heartland is the north. It is more green because just north of that is Galicia, and that's in Spain, where it's got a climate almost like Ireland, you know, it's very rainy. And in the south, you have more Muslim influence.
Exactly.
It's more dry, and it just feels like a big, high, windy prairie.
Exactly. It's like that. As a matter of fact, we call the city of Porto the London of Portugal.
Because of the weather?
Oh, because of the weather.
Now, let's talk about Porto for a minute, because
yes.
I love Porto. Lisbon has all the famous things, but Porto is just where you get your fingers dirty in Portugal.
Yes, yes. I love Porto
as
well.
Why do you like it?
I'm from Lisbon, so I'm not really not supposed to not like Porto.
Because this is competing cities.
Yes.
This is Chicago and New York in your country.
There's always a little bit of rivalry between the two big cities. But I love Porto, and I think that Porto has one of those cities that have so much things to give and still not so much explored.
It's famous for the port wine, of course, because
of course.
This is where the Douro River comes in to the Atlantic. And,
yes.
And all of the vineyards from the Douro Valley, they would send their grape juice down
yes.
the river on these historic boats.
Exactly. And the boats are still there now on the river. They do the cruises. They are no longer used for the transportation of the wine, but you still have the wine cellars.
So the rough and tumble town of Porto sort of tumbles down to the river, and then on the south bank of the river, across
exactly.
from the city, you've got all the famous names of the port
winemakers. Yes, they
wine
are about
makers.
200.
What
yes.
names do you see?
Sandman, Taylor's, Downs, Ferreira, Callum.
A lot of English names.
Yes, because they were the very first one, let's say, to discover port wine.
So the English made that industry.
Yeah.
Wow.
We had the grapes, we had the wine, and we also had the valley, but they brought the brandy to that wine, and they made a commerce out of it.
So you had the sunshine, the valley, the grapes.
And the people.
And the people. And England had the drinkers.
Yeah.
And the brandy, because
yeah.
you mix the wine with the brandy exactly. to make the port.
Yes.
That's
it's a blended
thing.
Wine.
In its day, Portugal was, you could say, one of the most powerful and richest countries in Europe, right?
Yes.
500 years ago, Vasco da Gama, Magellan, all these
yes.
great guys.
Yes.
And you see a lot of that richness because it was just like rake home the gold. And it was just very easy times for Portugal. And you saw a lot of the richness in the architecture. Where can you feel the importance of Portugal in its glory days outside of Lisbon?
Porto Porto for the Baroque. In that case, it's not the money brought from let's say, the commerce with India and the time of Vasco da Gama, but later on the 1700, with the money brought from the commerce and the trade of port wine. So
Baroque architecture.
Yeah. Porto is known as like the capital of Baroque in Portugal. So and the 1700, there is no better 1700 Baroque style less in north of Portugal. South of Portugal is more to the Manuelin style. So the part that is the 1500 and related with the commerce of India and Brazil and also some other places
because
in Africa.
Because Spain and Portugal basically divided up the world in their...
We needed to. Otherwise, it will be a conflict between the two countries.
So you had a friendly agreement. Yes. You say, we'll take Brazil, you take the rest of South America.
Friendly, it was not that friendly. As a matter of fact, we sat for a while and discussed it for almost 30 years. The Tordesillas Treaty took a while to make an agreement to how much and how were the length to each one of the countries to go, and in which direction.
It's interesting because Portugal and Spain, I understand, have one of the longest unchanging borders in Europe.
Yes.
So there's always been a very clear demarcation. This is Portugal, that's Spain.
There was, but it was rough. It was rough to keep those frontiers for a long time. I mean, since we have not altered our frontiers since 1249,
but, 1249, yes. So the border has not changed since 1249.
Exactly.
So that's 750 years.
It's one of the oldest borders in the world.
You welcome a lot of American travelers when they go to your home country in Portugal. Do you find it a little bit annoying when travelers come and they speak Spanish in Portugal or they think Portugal is kind of like one part of Spain?
No, actually, we have a characteristic. The Portuguese people are very warm and very welcoming. So when all the foreigner people, when tourists arrive to us and they speak to us in Spanish, actually what we see is somebody that is trying very hard to make us understand.
Oh, that's so sweet. You're so understanding.
But it's true. It's true. And we are that.
So if I say buenos dias, then you'll correct me.
Yeah, they will.
What would I say?
Yes, but they will. It's not correcting you in a hard way and
it's
making
just a loving.
We are in Portugal. It's bom dia.
Bom dia.
You see, like a mom that says, "Well, bom dia." Okay.
How are you distinct from Spain in just lifestyle?
Different. We are a kind of between the rest of Europe and the Spaniard in habitudes. So normally lunch for us, it is possible to have lunch around noon until 2.
See, you wouldn't find that in Spain.
No. And then dinner from 8, not before 8. It will be quite difficult. Between 8 and 9:30.
And Spain would be 9 until 11, I think.
The big difference is that as they have a huge time for siesta that we don't have, and if we have...
No siesta in Portugal?
No siesta. Ah. In the big cities, that's something that disappeared automatically. Everything is open. Everything is open from 1 to 3. Probably on the smaller cities, you still have this siesta time from 1 to 3.
Spain has a lot of tapas, these little tiny plates of food. I don't find that in Portugal.
No, really. We don't have. We have some similar things in south of Portugal, in the Alentejo area, in every area. And why is that? Because in these areas were very poor. So you don't have money to all the rich food. So you just picked the little things.
Okay.
You were doing appetizers or whatever.
Is there a word for that in Portuguese?
Petisco.
Petisco.
Petisco is the picking thing.
In Spain, the paseo is a big thing. Everybody's out and walking at a certain time.
That is something that I would like personally. I would like that Portugal will have more.
Yeah, so
because
that's
we have a wonderful weather and it will be nice to have it more.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're exploring Portugal with Cristina Duarte from Portugal. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. And Gail's on the phone in Irvine, California. Gail, thanks for your call.
Yes, hi. My husband and I are on a cruise that hits 2 ports in Portugal, Lisbon and Portimão. So we have just one day in each location, and we prefer to find a small private guided tour in each location and avoid the excursions that the cruise ship puts on. So my question is, how would I find a private guide for both Lisbon and Portimão, and what are the main sites that we should be looking to see?
Well, Cristina Duarte is a private guide. And there's a lot of good private guides like Christina. So Christina, without advertising you, let's just talk about you and your workmates in Lisbon.
Yes.
What does it cost if you were to meet the cruise ship privately and show somebody around?
Basically, we have the fees are based in, it's a four-hour tour
or eight-hour.
So half day or full day. And the prices are different between a weekday and a weekend.
So what's a weekday
the
for
weekday
4 hours?
The weekday is about 100 euros for 4 hours.
And for 8 hours?
165.
So
a weekday.
Okay, Gail, you got that? So it's about $130 for a private guide for 4 hours to meet you at the cruise ship.
Yes.
And you could gather your friends on the cruise ship together. You could have
up to 20 is the same price.
Up to 20. So if you've got a little entrepreneurial there for 10 bucks each, you can have your guide meet you at the port and you can pocket the difference and you're a tour organizer, all right?
Yes. Well, there are six.
Six of us, so that's dirt cheap.
Right now, so
and that's better than being herded around with the group.
By emailing, you also can get some help from one of the local guides in if you want also some kind of transportation.
Now, where's the cruise port in Lisbon?
There are three harbors that they are possible.
Right.
Normally, Alcantara is the normal one and Santa Apolonia, but there are three possibility places.
Is there easy access to the city?
Not really.
Taxi?
The taxi.
Hop in a taxi and in half an hour you're downtown.
That is an advice. When you jump out of the boat, please don't take the taxi that is there on the harbor. Just go further on for a couple of meters and just wave to one on passing.
On the street. Now, this is a very good tip anywhere in Europe. If the cabbies are waiting at the cruise ship, if there are dishonest taxis that want to take advantage of a green, rich tourist, they'll be camping out at the cruise port. And they're waiting there a long time.
Yes.
And there's a lot of competition. But if you simply walk away and flag down a taxi that's driving by, then you're just another customer. They'll turn on the meter and you're on your way.
Yes.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Yeah.
Good to know.
I think that's very good to know. And down in Portimao, there's frankly not a lot of great sightseeing down on the south if you had a day. There's just, you know, beautiful beaches and fun in the sun. If you had a day in Portimao with a guide in a car, Christina, where would you go?
Lagos, it's one of the possibilities. Silves is not far away.
What about Sagres?
Sagres has a belvedere, has a viewpoint and with the nature because you will be like in the end of the Iberia.
Well, that's like the end of Europe. That's
yes,
the south
yes, it will be west you,
tip of all of Europe.
You and the ocean.
Wow. All right. Gail, have a good time.
Okay. Thank you very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for your call.
Okay.
I'm Rick Steves. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Christina Duarte about her home country, Portugal. Christina, of course, Portugal had a difficult time with its dictator, Salazar. When was Salazar put out of power?
He died in 69,
but
the revolution was 1974.
74, you won your freedom, basically.
Yes.
Is there a heritage of that dictatorial time in Portugal that's interesting for a tourist to know about?
Yes, because many things changed. Of course, there was a huge change of the country. And, there was a development after that because there was a certain way of thinking.
So suddenly there was a freedom to...
There was a freedom on thinking, on talking, on writing, on art also.
Was there a backlash that went really into the crazy zone because they were so controlled before that? You know, when you have no freedom and suddenly you have freedom.
Yes. My expression for that is like a child on a toy shop.
Okay, so you were like, we say like kids in a candy store.
Okay.
You were like children in a candy store when the dictator was gone.
Yes, it's like that. It was like that.
So it's kind of like Spain after Franco.
Yes.
Similar
yes.
thing. 10 years ago, Portugal legalized the consumption of all drugs.
Yes.
Now, you've had 10 years of this experience where it's like we can't hardly imagine that. Not just marijuana, all drugs are legal. What has been the result of that?
You don't feel so much that thing. I mean, it's not like because it is legalized that everybody right now is smoking on the streets. No, you don't feel
so
that.
So basically, they just wanted to take the crime out of it and the money out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And 10 years later, Portugal is generally happy with this new law.
You don't feel any difference.
No difference.
No.
And I think other countries are paying attention to that. Portugal is a member of the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And in the beginning, you were one of the poor countries of the European Union, so you got more money.
Yes. That now, at the end, we are also ending up by being the one of the poorest.
And ONU is just where you started.
Yes.
Is it good to be in the European Union, or do you wish you were ahead?
No, I can't talk about everybody's opinion. My personal opinion is that it's better to be on than be out.
Mm-hmm. And economic times are difficult, either way. When I go to Portugal, I love the seafood. If I want the best seafood, where do I go?
Nearby the sea. Lisbon, you have pretty much good restaurants on the seafood.
What should I know to order? The cod is from Norway, basically. Isn't it? It's dry and salty.
Yes, but it's a fish that was possible to buy in different quantities and different prices. So it became very popular because if you had more money, you could buy a better one. If you had less money, you could buy just the tongues.
Was that right?
Yeah.
The bad cuts.
That's why we have 365 ways of cooking bacalhau, because you cook it, you had for all prices.
And so it's the national dish of Portugal,
yes.
And it covers all economic classes.
Yes, all economical classes.
And I suppose people of all economic classes like sweets.
Yes.
What sweet should I be sure to enjoy when I'm in your country?
In Lisbon, pastel de nata, or pastel de Belém.
Describe.
Yeah, it's like a custard cake.
Yeah.
Very crusty and...
Yeah. Pastel de nata.
Pastel de nata. Or mostly known as Pastel de Belém, because the best pastry shop is in Belém district.
I'm not normally like, oh, that was to die for. But these pastel de nata,
yes,
it's like the pastry of N-A-T-A, nata?
N-A-T-A, yes.
Or specifically from the town of Belém, B-E-L-E-M.
Yes.
And I'll tell you, anywhere in Portugal, I love a pastel de nata.
Yeah.
Christine Duarte, obrigado
de
for
nada.
Being with us today.
Obrigada.
Cada vez mais português anda nas asas do vento. Às vezes solta um lamento e pede para ser achado. Ele é querido, ele é amado. O fado, ele é querido, ele é amado. O fado, ele é querido, ele é amado. O fado.
Tell us how you've been inspired in your travels in the form of an original haiku poem. The radio section of our website at ricksteves.com has details on how to send us your submissions. Here are some recent examples of what listeners have sent us.
Will Phillips from Seattle writes us with these haiku about landing in Europe. Transatlantic lag, lifted upon arrival among new faces. Ancient nations live, pushing proud at the edges of our world-worn maps. Randy Hamm of Bakersfield, California, noticed this in the fields of Switzerland. Alpine cattle graze, dangling uniquely tuned bells, wind chime on the hoof. And J. David Hirschberger of Boulder, Colorado, sums up his travel rewards like this. The tattered suitcase of a weary traveler restoreth my soul.
Travel writer Don George joins us next to explain why a healthy appetite should be on every packing list. 877-333-RICK is how you reach us at Travel with Rick Steves.